From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last night, the first actual votes of this presidential election season came in from Iowa. On the Republican side, the opinion poll favorite, Donald Trump, was trumped by Ted Cruz.
Tonight is a victory for courageous conservatives across Iowa and all across this great nation.
On the Democratic side, boy, it almost depended who you talked to. A squeaker, the state Democratic Party, called it for Hillary Clinton by a whisker. She was glad to celebrate.
So as I stand here tonight, breathing a big sigh of relief, thank you, Iowa.
But don't tell that to Bernie Sanders. He's calling it a virtual tie.
What Iowa has begun tonight is a political revolution.
What just happened in Iowa? What does it mean? We are all over it. This hour, On Point, the message out of Iowa. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Iowans, what did you see here? And listeners nationwide, what do these results tell you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Des Moines is Molly Ball, national political correspondent for The Atlantic. Molly, great as always to have you, and especially on this day. Thanks so much for being here.
Great to be here, Tom. Thank you.
And with her in the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines is Rachel Caulfield, professor of political science, associate director of the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement, no less, at Drake University in Des Moines. She's out with a new book called The Iowa Caucus. She's deep into this. Rachel, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here today.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure.
Can we just start for a second with Clinton and Sanders, and are all the numbers in? Molly, is it absolutely clear? This thing was so very close. We were hearing about coin toss out there. Is it clear who won?
Not entirely. The Democratic Party has called this for Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton has declared victory. But it is so close that, you know, there's always a possibility of outstanding issues. And I think what you're going to hear is both candidates sort of spinning this as a win because it was a virtual tie. You have Hillary Clinton taking the technical victory and also, as we heard in the clip, saying this is a sigh of relief for her because she wasn't blown out. They are saying that anything short of a blowout for Bernie Sanders is a win for Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders, though, can say, look how close we came. We're in a virtual dead heat with this person who was supposed to be the unstoppable front runner. And that, I think, is going to give a lot of cheer and really embolden his supporters going forward in New Hampshire.
Rachel, we heard Hillary Clinton there saying in the tape what a big sigh of relief she was breathing. But how big, really, with this outcome?
Well, I think, as Molly said, you know, the Clinton campaign needed to not lose. And they didn't lose. But there's no question that this is a tight, tight, tight finish for her, far tighter than she wanted it to be. So, you know, they really took the reins last night, declared the victory while they could, and are now moving on. She learned a lot of lessons from 2008, and given her history in Iowa, this was a relief for her.
I mean, today's Groundhog Day. She didn't want it to be Groundhog Day on the
outcome. That's right.
and it wasn't. So good for her. She dodged that bullet. Rachel, look at Trump and Cruz and explain, please. We saw them go back and forth in the polls. In the event, when it actually happened, it's Cruz. How did he do that? Why didn't the Donald?
Well, I think there are a couple things about Iowa that Ted Cruz understood from the outset. The first was you got to be in the state, shaking hands, meeting people, saying hi, explaining your ideas. He really put a lot of time into that ground game, and it was coupled with a pretty outstanding data effort. He had a really sophisticated data operation. His micro-targeting was on point. It really allowed him to reach out to two key constituencies in the state. One is social conservatives, and the other are the Tea Party conservatives. He really consolidated those two groups, and ultimately I think it led him to victory.
Here is a disappointed Trump supporter talking to ABC News last night, trying to make the best of Donald not being number one.
I'm not surprised. Iowa never picks the winner. You know, last time it was Santorum and Romney in it, you know, neck and neck, so... I'm sure Trump will have a slam dunk in New Hampshire. We'll see how that goes.
People have fought so hard for this, and as soon as it's over, it's on to the next, and people are ready to say, how much does it really matter if they didn't win? Molly Ball, what about it? I mean, the record is pretty clear since, was George H.W. Bush. It hasn't been the Republican who won in Iowa who went on to win.
Well, except for George W. Bush in 2000, I believe.
Yeah, okay.
But it has been 16 years. And I was at that Trump caucus watch party last night where, you know, the air sort of pretty quickly went out of the room as it became clear what was happening. Hilariously enough, the TVs were all tuned to CNN, not Fox News. And CNN was one of the last networks to call the race. But you know, I talked to some Trump supporters who none of them were giving up, obviously. There's this new conventional wisdom that now that the air has gone out of the Trump balloon, he's not a hashtag winner anymore. He's just going to completely flop everywhere. I'm skeptical of that. And the people in the room were saying, well, like you heard there, Iowa just wasn't his state. People were disappointed. People really did expect a win. Trump expected a win. He gave this very interesting speech where he said he was humbled and honored and he didn't have his sort of usual bluster. Mm-hmm. And the feeling, you know, I spoke to a Trump supporter in the room who said he's a flashy billionaire from New York. He's never been someone that Iowans could really relate to. And Cruz focused much more on that traditional Iowa electorate. Trump was trying to bring out a lot of people who've never caucused before. That's always a risky bet. And in this case, it didn't pay off.
I mean, that's kind of the case he made himself last night, saying that in advance of all this, his friend said, don't even go to Iowa. You won't even be in the top 10. Here was Donald Trump giving that kind of recap on all this.
And I said, but I have friends in Iowa. I know a lot of people in Iowa. I think they'll really like me. Let's give it a shot. They said, don't do it. I said, I have to do it. And we finished second, and I want to tell you something. I'm just honored. I'm really honored.
Donald Trump going low-key last night. He's got good numbers in New Hampshire. We'll see how the hashtag winner thing works there. Rachel, what about it? Did he bring out bigger numbers, or did bigger numbers just come out? And I guess if they did, they didn't break his way.
Yeah, we did have record turnout on the Republican side last night, about 180-some thousand caucus goers. That compares to, on average, about 120,000. So we did have big numbers on the Republican side. It didn't translate for Donald Trump. You know, I think Molly's right in the sense that, you know, people are saying this is the end of Donald Trump. This is not the end of Donald Trump. This is a dent in the armor of Donald Trump. And he lives to fight another day, no question. He's very, very strong in New Hampshire. I think in some ways, Iowa will prove to be very good for him in the sense that this new humility may serve him incredibly well as he moves into the next few states.
Meanwhile, it was Hillary Clinton putting the best face, well, it was, I mean, a victory. It's been called a victory, but who wouldn't have wanted a bigger one? Of course, she didn't want to lose. She experienced that under Barack Obama. Here she was last night.
This has been an incredible honor to campaign across Iowa with so many of you to make the case for the kind of future we want for the Democratic Party and for the United States of America.
Hillary Clinton taking the victory, if by a whisker, and Bernie Sanders across town. Hey, virtual tie is how he describes it.
We had no money, we had no name recognition, and we were taking on the most powerful political organization in the United States of America. And tonight, while the results are still not known, it looks like we are in a virtual tie.
Bernie Sanders last night. Molly Ball, credit to Hillary Clinton. She squeaked it out. But is it not remarkable that this Democratic Socialist from Vermont is that close to a politician who's been so high in the public eye for so long?
And that he got fully half of the vote. I mean, this is not a fractured field like the Republicans have, where a figure, a divisive figure like a Trump or even a Cruz can win with less than a third.
Yeah.
This is half of the Democratic
primary. I mean, I'm looking at the results
here. 1,680
precincts. Yeah. All but one, 99% of precincts in. And Bernie, in this count, is at 50%. Hillary's at 50%. I mean, five votes different. That's a full that Rachel, how do you account for that?
Well, I think one of the things that we've learned from the Sanders campaign is that the left wing of the Democratic Party is alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
He's really done a good job, I think, of giving voice to this left wing of the party, many of whom came out in 2008 and supported Barack Obama in record numbers, thinking that he was going to be the face of the left wing of the party. It hasn't turned out that way. And so I think you have some dissatisfaction with Obama's small C conservative approach to government. I mean, he's a pretty risk averse politician, and so they are now finding a home with Bernie Sanders, and that faction of the party has really reasserted itself during this cycle. I don't think anybody thought it would come in the form of Bernie Sanders, of all people. He's an unlikely torchbearer for this movement.
Yeah, if I can just jump in. Yes. I mean, I think the Sanders candidacy is a real wake-up call for Democrats about how divided the party is. I think there has been a bit of denial on the part of Democrats that, oh, Bernie is just a sort of emotional catharsis for some frustrated liberals and they'll get over it. That's not the case, at least in states like Iowa and New Hampshire, where Bernie seems to be pulling way ahead. This is a left-wing base that, as Rachel said, has not gotten what it wanted from President Obama and really wants to send a message to the Democratic establishment that it is time to smash the system and move away from the status quo.
I mean, Rachel, people might have thought, well, sure, we can feel that out there, but in Iowa, middle of the country, middle America, Iowa, really in Iowa? And there it is.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of firebrands in Iowa. We're not known for for being, crazy liberals out here. But I do think, we have a lot of young people and we have a lot of people who are really dedicated to, I think, the what would historically be known as this idea of progressive politics.
Mm-hmm.
Honest, progressive politics. And I think they found their guy.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the Iowa caucus results. Ted Cruz on top for the GOP. Trump and Rubio next in line. A very close result for Democrats, with the party naming Hillary Clinton the winner and Bernie Sanders within a whisper. Molly Ball is with us from Des Moines, national political correspondent for The Atlantic. Rachel Caulfield is here, professor of political science at Drake University there in Des Moines, author of the big new book coming out, The Iowa Caucus, no less. You can join us this hour, Clinton supporters. Is this a good enough outcome for you, a good enough victory, or a red flag? And what's the takeaway for Trump here, for Marco Rubio coming in number three here, and a pretty strong number three, Sanders people? Are you heartened? If Bernie can come so close in Iowa, is everything within his reach? Very different sounds, of course, coming out of victory camps and near victory camps last night. Here was Ted Cruz. You've heard a lot of this, but listen to the pillars he's laying down.
Tonight is a testament to the people's commitments, to their yearnings to get back to our core commitments, free market principles, constitutional liberties, and the Judeo-Christian values that built this great nation.
Get back there, says Ted Cruz. Bernie Sanders may be leaning quite a different way. Here he was.
You guys ready for a radical idea?
Yeah!
Well, so is America. And that radical idea is we are going to create an economy that works for working families, not just the billionaire class.
And that had traction in Iowa last night. Not enough to claim that number one seat, but within a whisker, Hillary Clinton at her caucus party in Des Moines saying, hey, American reformer, that's me. I'm in that line of American reformers.
I am honored to stand in the long line of American reformers who make up our minds that the status quo is not good enough, that standing still is not an option, and that brings people together to find ways forward that will improve the lives of Americans.
There it is. Everybody's taking their claim last night. Rubio doing pretty well. Trump's still in it, ahead in the polls. On down the line, boy, some you could barely hear from. Jeb Bush, I think number six, way down there after all that early talk about Jeb. Let's hear from listeners, and I want to get back to you, Rachel and Molly, as well. But Jim, right there in Dubuque, Iowa. Jim, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking the call. I was at the Dubuque Republican caucus last night.
Okay.
And it was totally different from any other caucus I've ever been to.
Why? How?
For one thing, it was crowded. by that, I mean, last time there were maybe 500, 600 people in a basketball auditorium at the local college that fit easily, sit around chairs, talk with the other people in the caucus.
Laid back.
Here, They were in an elementary school with an auditorium that held 850 people. They had one estimate had as low as 1,200 people. The other was as high as 2,000 people.
You might have had 2,000 people there last night? And did your crew go for the Cruz or Trump? Or what happened there, Jim?
Well, let's see. If I remember right, Cruz was first, Rubio was second, and Trump was last. Trump was third.
Okay.
So,
what brought you out last night, Jim? Who did you end up voting for?
I voted for anyone who wasn't Donald Trump. Let's put it that way.
Why?
Heck, this is going to cut down the conversation right away, but I got to say it. I look at history, and I look at how Adolf Hitler was elected, validly elected in a national election, and I just see far, far, far too many similarities of fighting against the outsiders. They're going to be invading us. They're going to be hurting us. We got to attack them first. Just far too many. I'm going to pull jobs out of the thin air, and everyone's going to be employed. Far too many similarities for me to be anywhere close to comfortable with Trump being president.
Jim, are you a lifetime Republican, or what's the cut of your political jib here?
Started out Democrat, turned to Republican, and I'll tell you, if it was a choice between Donald Trump and Bernie, I would have voted for Bernie.
Last night, anyway.
I see him as a far less greater threat.
You've got other options. Ben Carson's still in the race. Jim, I really appreciate your call and that description of that overflow crowd there in Dubuque. Rachel Caulfield, they traditionally would have had 200. They expected 800. They got maybe 2,000. That's amazing.
I think we saw this at precinct locations all across the state. I kept hearing from friends and students, and I was at our caucus locations on campus last night. Every single one of them was not just full, but overflowing, and not just overflowing, but almost unbelievably overflowing. So it was a really fun night in that respect. I do think, you know, for those of us who have been doing it a few times, caucusing is a long process, or it can be a long process when you're still checking people in at 7:30 because of overflow crowds. It can become a very long process.
Yeah. You know, what about you heard our caller there and that kind of extreme fear he had of Trump. Of course, Trump came in second. He got a lot of people who were for him anyway. What have you observed, Rachel, about how Republicans break one way or another on the Trump-Cruz standoff, let's say? I mean, here, our caller says, I fear a Hitler. But there's a lot of Republicans standing up. I mean, Jerry Falwell Jr., saying, you know, even kind of citing Jesus and saying, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, as if bring on Caesar, and welcoming that.
Yeah, so I think across both Trump and Cruz, we have a slice of voters who are really interested in strength and the idea of resolve against threats and vulnerabilities. But I think the key difference between them is that in the case of Trump supporters, it's really, you know, this is about personality. This is about, I don't want to say unilateral action, but this is about using the presidency in a very tangible way. I think in the case of Cruz supporters, they see it as creating a group of people in a system of governing. And those are two very different approaches to the idea of strength.
Can I say something, Tom?
Yes,
we have got to talk about Marco Rubio.
Yes.
Because this was a huge night for Marco Rubio. And
Behind Trump at 23%. It's Trump's 24, Cruz 28. He was right in there, very strong.
He almost overtook Donald Trump for second place, and that is a huge result for him. He massively outran his last polling number. He was at 15% in that final Des Moines Register poll, came in with 23%. Again, so nearly a quarter of the vote. So, you know, he was mocked a little bit for giving a speech that sounded like a victory speech when he came in third. But this really was a win for him. He is going to go into New Hampshire with a huge head of steam. He is going to have a lot of momentum among those people like your caller who have felt like there needed to be an alternative to Trump and even to Cruz, because a lot of Republicans are also not sold on the vision of conservatives conservatism that Cruz represents, but they didn't know where to go. And so that is, you know, if Trump's getting a quarter and Cruz is getting a quarter, which depending on the state may be the case, half of the Republican Party is looking for somebody else. And if Rubio looks like the one who can unify those people, I think there's going to be a huge move in his direction. I was at a caucus site last night in West Des Moines, so a sort of big suburban, affluent caucus. And the man who spoke for Rubio was a local city councilman. And he got up there and he said, Trump and Cruz are too divisive. They cannot win a general election. Rubio will unite this party and beat Hillary Clinton. That is the message that that Rubio supporters are talking to their friends and neighbors about. And, you know, there's going to be a big pile on him now, probably also from Trump. We'll hear a lot about Marco Rubio. But I think to voters in New Hampshire who are looking for a unifying candidate for the party, one who doesn't scare them, Rubio is going to have a lot of momentum.
And he was out there with exactly that theme last night. Big smile, Marco Rubio in his third place finish right behind Trump, saying, they said I wasn't old enough. They said, you know, there were the 5 minutes where his boots were with the tall heels were a subject of the campaign, for heaven's sakes. Here was Rubio last night.
For months, they told us because we offered too much optimism in a time of anger, we had no chance. For months, they told us because we didn't have the right endorsements or the right political connections, we had no chance. They told me that we have no chance because my hair wasn't gray enough and my boots were too high.
those boots, Rachel. What do you see for Rubio coming up in New Hampshire? This is a big springboard for him now, Rachel.
This is a huge springboard for him. I mean, when we think about the Iowa caucuses and kind of the local lore, the national lore of what Iowa does. Iowa creates momentum candidates. Rubio was the big winner last night. There's no question in my mind. He is the only candidate in my mind who's coming out of Iowa with clear and unexpected momentum. That's the story that people really love to see. And I agree completely that this is a situation where Rubio is positioned now to tell the world, I am the one that can unite all those people out there who are looking for an establishment candidate. Let's stop fracturing from among the various choices. Let's come together and coalesce. I'm your guy. And he can make that claim now in a way that he certainly could not make on Sunday.
The Iowa surprise, maybe Marco Rubio. Let's go to Grinnell, Iowa. And Barney. Barney, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
We caucused at a small town fire hall in Kellogg last night. The two things that we noticed, the people with good jobs at our local college are solid Hillary people, most of them. The other thing that we have noticed from knocking on a lot of doors for Bernie and talking to a lot of our Republican friends, our Republican friends would not dream of voting for Hillary. And they will consider Bernie. I had one that even contemplated caucusing for him, and he said he had never voted Democrat in his life.
And you're saying working class Republican friends who might feel a little Bernie itch in there. What about Marco Rubio and that crowd, Barney?
Most of them are not considered, unless it's completely the evangelical side. Some of them lean a little bit that way. But other than that, they are not very excited about most of the candidates. I mean, the ones I've been talking to, let's put it that way. A good friend across the interstate, he has been a Republican all his life, seriously considering. He said if it's down to Trump and Hillary, he said, I'll go for Trump in a heartbeat. And he's not a Trump fan. He said if it's Trump and Bernie, I will vote for Bernie, no problem.
Boy, we're in a new world here. Hillary last night saying, I'll fight for you, but I want to pick up on your theme. Here was Hillary.
I want you to know I will keep doing what I have done my entire life. I will keep standing up for you. I will keep fighting for you.
Molly Ball, what about the class picture that's drawn there by our caller from Grinnell? You know, well-paid friends of his, steady jobs, Democrats, Hillary. Others, not so necessarily secure, Republican and Democrat, Bernie, or maybe Bernie.
Well, I'm not sure if the crosstabs bear that out, and I'd be interested to see the income breakdown. But if you think about it, that is a distinction that makes a lot of sense. Hillary Clinton is the status quo candidate. So people who are doing okay and who feel like the way things are going may not be totally satisfying, but they just want to sort of build on it and not do anything too disruptive. Those are the people who in my experience, are going to be for Hillary and who her message of taking the progress that that President Obama mm-hmm. has made and mm-hmm. moving it forward makes sense to them. On the other hand, people who are not doing well and people who feel like we need a dramatic disruption to make their lives better, they're going to be for a candidate who's promising a more disruptive change. And Bernie is the candidate who is against the status quo. And this is what he has in common with someone like Donald Trump. He's the candidate who's saying, tear down the establishment, tear down the old policies and systems and put something new in their place. Even if I can't say exactly how I'm going to do that, we need a radical change. So I think it makes sense that the people who the system is currently not serving are the ones who are going to want a more disruptive candidate.
Rachel, does Ted Cruz have something for those people? I mean, he's got a values argument. We heard him there, Judeo-Christian and the rest. Does he have something for the people who think we've got too much inequality, the economy is just not working for me, politics are bought and paid for? Does Ted Cruz have something for that crowd?
Cruz is not that crowd's candidate. But I did want to follow up. I think the one flashpoint where this divide is most clear is the conversations that I've heard all around the state about campaign finance and about who is funding these candidates. And when they see candidates with big super PACs and a lot of money and all this glossy, you know, the glossy ads and the whatever else.
Jeb Bush.
I think it signals to a certain segment of the population, look, these are status quo people. They're buying into our campaign politics as we've practiced it for years and years and years, and it hasn't really worked. Republicans are unhappy because they bought into this Republican revolution idea. They sent a whole bunch of Republicans to Congress. They're not getting what they want. Democrats, I think, are displeased because they thought they were investing in this left-wing politician in Barack Obama. They didn't get what they wanted. The one thing that Donald Trump in particular and Bernie Sanders have in common is exactly this, and it is, you know, they look at these campaigns and I hear over and over and over again that one of the reasons both of them are so appealing is that they're not taking money. They're not bought and paid for. They're not part of the existing system, so they can offer something from outside the system, something new and fresh and disruptive, and do something different.
Free actors and disruptors. One more. We'll go to New Hampshire and James Pendle in just a second. But Caitlin, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. James, Caitlin, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you see?
Well, you know, I'm in Republican Oklahoma, but I'm more of a moderate, and I've been really unsure about Bernie just because, you know, when it comes down to practice, I don't know if he can actually get what he says done. But, you know, it's kind of like voting in Oklahoma, you pick your favorite loser, and it's really Bernie because he's bringing up issues that are extremely important, especially in the dilapidated, impoverished, and over criminal justice systems. Is failing. And you know,
Caitlin, what about the Clinton argument that he'll just beat his head against a wall of opposition in Congress? If he wins the presidency, he won't be able to enact what he dreams of.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest concern with Bernie is that, you know, maybe he's too stubborn, maybe he's pushing too hard, and he's not going to get anything done. But, you know, with Hillary, she's just easily swayed by the powers that exist, the establishment that everyone is complaining about. And everyone's tired of that. You know, they want real issues brought up that keep getting ignored. And Bernie's so focused on his particular issue. And there's something about that that's just clarifying that we don't see in politics these days.
Caitlin, I'm glad for your call from Oklahoma City. Molly, does Bernie gain a he can do it rep coming out with his strong showing in Iowa? Or are people going to look forward and say, well, how?
Well, I think as the caller said, the Bernie is the candidate of people who are not as concerned with how you get it done and are more concerned with facing the problems that we have and speaking about them in a way that feels more forthright to them.
This On Point podcast is made possible by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace websites help you capture every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you're ready to purchase, use the one-word offer code ONPOINT to save 10%. You should. Squarespace.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the Iowa caucus results. Ted Cruz on top for the GOP. Trump and Rubio next in line. Strong showing by Marco Rubio there. A very, very close result for Democrats, with the party naming Hillary Clinton the winner and Bernie Sanders within a whisper. You can join the conversation this hour. Of course, it's all moving to New Hampshire. New Hampshire listeners, what does Iowa now say to you? Will you make Trump a winner in New Hampshire? Give Hillary a chance, a win? Will you feel the burn? Go for Rubio? With Molly Ball of The Atlantic, Rachel Caulfield from Drake University, Ted Cruz last night saying, the voters have spoken, not the media.
Iowa has sent notice that the Republican nominee and the next president of the United States will not be chosen by the media.
Okay, we knew that. Bernie Sanders talking with Chris Cuomo before dawn this morning, moments after he landed in New Hampshire, talked about the virtual tie, as he liked to call it, and what it means for his campaign.
The significance is that for folks who did not think Bernie Sanders could win, that we could compete against Hillary Clinton, I hope that that thought is now gone. We're going to fight really hard in New Hampshire, and then we're going to Nevada, and then we're going to South Carolina. We look forward to doing well around the country.
And Donald Trump, before he left Iowa, saying, well, we'll go on and do this. We will do this. And I love Iowa. Might buy a farm.
We will go on to get the Republican nomination, and we will go on to easily beat Hillary or Bernie or whoever the hell they throw up there. Iowa, we love you. We thank you. We will be back many, many times. In fact, I think I might come here and buy a farm. I love it, okay? Thank you.
A hotel, a farm, a casino. Molly, Rachel, please stand by. James Pindle joins us right now from Chris Christie campaign headquarters in Bedford, New Hampshire, political reporter for the Boston Globe all over this 2016 race. James Pindle, great to have you with us. How does all this look coming at New Hampshire? What's the meaning for New Hampshire?
You know, I heard a lot of talk about momentum, so let's talk about that for a second. You know, ever since George H.W. Bush won Iowa in 1980, he talked about how he got the big mo going into New Hampshire, and there's clearly that we've seen that happen through history. Gary Hart had the big mo. Even Barack Obama most recently had the big mo. You can go through all these different candidates, but then what happens is that the New Hampshire campaign takes place, and a lot of those people who have the big mo lose the big mo, and New Hampshire goes to somebody else. George H.W. Bush, of course, lost that big mo over 5 weeks. Barack Obama lost that over the course of 5 days in 2008 before the voters of New Hampshire chose someone else called Hillary Clinton. I think heading out of Iowa, we have some small mo. There's no question that Marco Rubio clearly has some momentum in this state, but this is going to be a lot harder for him here in New Hampshire, where he's got other candidates who actually are competing hard and much harder in New Hampshire in his lane than ever competed in Iowa. And then, of course, you have to say Ted Cruz has got some, again, small mo. But the fundamental dynamics the day after Iowa are the same in New Hampshire. Donald Trump is still the front runner, though we don't know by how much. Bernie Sanders is the front runner in the state, though we don't know by how much. Ted Cruz had already long consolidated conservatives, so I guess he would gain some maybe with Ben Carson voters or Mike Huckabee people, who obviously he dropped out of the contest. And then, of course, you have this clustered establishment lane, which is still very much the case, though we have to see if Marco Rubio is able to get any momentum really out of Iowa. But the fundamental dynamics of New Hampshire remain the same even after a dramatic night in Iowa last night.
James, is there a chance in New Hampshire of a Trump gap? I mean, there was, you know, he was up in the opinion polls in Iowa, but didn't take the caucuses. In New Hampshire, he's way up in the opinion polls. But what about a gap between those opinion polls and votes and organization? I mean, his rep is, I'm a winner. He didn't win in Iowa. Is there the chance for that same kind of gap to show up when New Hampshire people finally actually cast a vote?
I think these are the very significant questions here. I had a front page story in the Globe on Saturday looking at doing a deep dive on the Trump ground game in New Hampshire. And look, They are very late to the game on this. They really started ramping up about a month ago with a very big data program. In the Chris Christie headquarters now, they have been doing this for months and months, as has Jeb Bush, as has Chris Christie with his, as is John Kasich with his super PAC. But look, he's got 10,000 people in New Hampshire who have signed not only pledge cards to vote for him, but they want to volunteer for him. And they have been producing hundreds of thousands of calls for the last 3 weeks, which is extremely impressive. Now, look, he's been trying to build this from scratch. I think there are a lot of questions on his organization. The same questions, by the way, we're having about Marco Rubio. He's also a person who did not do the spade work that you need to do in a place like New Hampshire. And now he's trying to recreate this in, say, the last month and a half, where his opponents have been doing this with data, with door knocking since the summer.
Mollyball, here's lots of response online here. Prudence says at our Twitter site, come on, Cruz and Trump were only 4 points apart. Hardly a sweeping win. 62% voted against Cruz. How does Cruz's hard right message, kind of angry right message, you might say, how does it travel, Molly?
It's a really interesting question. I'm very interested to see how Cruz is going to play this in New Hampshire. I actually spent a couple days in New Hampshire with Ted Cruz a couple weeks ago, and he has campaigned there. He's not conceding the state at all, even though it's clearly not as strong a state for him as an evangelical-driven state like Iowa or like South Carolina, where he also expects to perform well. But as James said, Cruz is hoping that the type of voters that he attracts, there is a segment of them in New Hampshire, even though it's smaller, and he can consolidate them and do decently well. He's not expecting to win, but he is currently in second place. Now, these polls are probably irrelevant, the pre-Iowa polls. And what James is sort of too polite to say because he's in the tank for New Hampshire is that the New Hampshire voters love to give the finger to the Iowa voters.
Yes,
they love to take whatever the Iowa voters just did, and because they're sort of flinty and obstinate and contrarian, the New Hampshire voters say, "Nuh-uh, we're going to go in a completely other direction." So Cruz does have an operation, a strategy in New Hampshire. And what he's done is similar to what he did in Iowa. He's taken the sort of apparatus of the conservative movement, all of these little organizations, whether they're pastors that have a constituency, whether they're 9/12 groups and pro-gun groups, and all conservatives love to form clubs.
Yep.
And Ted Cruz has found all of these little clubs all over every state. And he has gone and he has spoken to them and he has consolidated them with this message that it's time for conservatives to unify and prevent a moderate from getting the nomination. So it'll be interesting for me to see how hard Cruz hits New Hampshire now, or whether he sort of tries to downplay it in favor of moving on to South Carolina.
James, I'll bring that question to you. Rubio wants to be that moderate. Here he was last night in Iowa.
Tonight, I thank you here in Iowa. I thank you because tonight we have taken the first step, but an important step, towards winning this election. If I am our nominee, and I will be our nominee, thanks to what you have done here in this great state, when I am our nominee, we are going to unify this party, and we are going to unify the conservative movement.
What kind of Republican does New Hampshire want, James? Anyone that Iowa didn't choose?
Well, look, the same sentiments that we saw in Iowa of an outsider or a conservative candidate is still something very much here. Well, this is not a campaign about issues. This is a campaign about sentiment. I agree with pretty much everything that Molly had to say, including being in the tank for New Hampshire, though Rachel would like to know.
Hey, I love New Hampshire.
Rachel would be interested to know that I went to college at Drake because of the Iowa caucuses. So
all right. The old school song is coming out here in a minute. Okay.
Exactly. However, I would say this about Molly's point on Ted Cruz, which is, yes, this is not ideologically the best state for Ted Cruz. But I remind you, we have so many candidates running. We have 11 candidates now after Huckabee is out of this race. That first place is going to be about 30%, 25 to 30%. Second place could be 18 to 19%. Are one out of five New Hampshire Republicans Ted Cruz Republicans? Yeah, they are. So he easily could get second place. And then that's the question about Rubio, to your other question. Will we even have an establishment lane? What does it even mean if we have, again, Trump and Cruz in one and two spots? Does Rubio get close, or is it actually I don't think he gets as close to second place as he does in Iowa just because he has so much more competition for number three here.
Okay, for the Drake Club. Rachel, let me put this to you. We've got a listener, Michigan, on the website who went with a comment and a question. He says, Iowa's freakishly far-right conservatives, what a phrase, always pick someone who ultimately loses the Republican nomination. Does this mean, this guy writes, or gal, we can breathe a sigh of relief and relegate the putsy Ted Cruz to the dustbin of history? Rachel.
That is quite a question. There is no question. Iowa conservatives are different than New Hampshire conservatives. And I think James is right in that, you know, when you look at the Iowa voters, Marco Rubio stepped up last night and he's going to make a claim now that he has the ability to unify all of these – this fractured establishment base. New Hampshire, those establishment candidates have been running strong for a long time. In fact, they're putting their eggs in New Hampshire. And what that means is you got all of those establishment candidates. All of them have been working New Hampshire. And let's not forget, New Hampshire didn't start today. New Hampshire's been doing the same thing Iowa has. They know these candidates well. And the candidates know them well. So they've been there. They've been working the ground game in New Hampshire. The establishment vote in New Hampshire will be fragmented by definition. So Rubio needs to figure out how to sell himself as an alternative. I think he's actually stronger in some other states, but it's going to be interesting to see if he can capitalize on his Iowa win. Ted Cruz could easily unify the social conservatives, the Tea Party conservatives, the far right conservatives of New Hampshire, particularly as some of the other candidates start to drop out and or, you know, kind of make clear that their campaigns may not be as vibrant as they had originally hoped.
A lot more work to do and only 1 week to do it until New Hampshire. Dale in Chautauqua, Wisconsin. Dale, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a Cruz supporter.
Okay.
I like the guy. I think he would be a good president.
Okay.
But he was a good senator. You know, he really stood up and spoke out for what he believed. But when Obama couldn't get his way into the Senate, he was one of them to shut down the government.
Cruz
what
did,
he
yeah.
What's he going to do as president? Is he going to shut down the White House?
I don't know. Molly Ball, will Ted Cruz shut down the White House?
Well, it's interesting that this is a caller who likes Ted Cruz but is sort of given pause by some of the things he's done in the Senate. We know Ted Cruz is not well-liked in the Senate. He is
Wacklebird, John McCain famously called him.
Right, and the architect of the shutdown. So it's interesting that even some people who vibe ideologically with Ted Cruz are given pause by his tactics, and that's certainly something you hear from the dreaded Republican establishment is, look, we like Ted Cruz. We believe in getting rid of Obamacare. We just don't think that the government ought to be shut down to do it. I mean, when you talk about Rubio, I think Rubio is not a moderate in a lot of ways ideologically, and he has a lot of appeal. I've heard from Trump supporters who are considering Rubio. I've heard from Cruz supporters who are considering Rubio. He's someone who is a lot of people's second choice, and that's why I think he has so much upside, is that he does look like someone who can unify a lot of these different strains of the Republican Party.
Trump, Cruz, Sanders, Rubio, a lot of kind of volatile choices out there for voters, each in their own way and maybe in different degrees. Shelley in Norfolk, Connecticut. Shelley, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to point out that Hillary's victory last night in Iowa was historic. It's absolutely, you know, unprecedented.
First woman.
First woman, and I grew up in Iowa. Iowa does not have a tradition of electing female leaders. And so I'm hugely proud of both my home state and of Hillary Clinton.
Did it for Barack Obama. Now they've done it for Hillary Clinton. What do you think of her prospects as we sit here with Bernie so close on her heels, Shelley?
Well, like any woman who tries to reach a high level of, you know, of performance, you have to be several times more qualified than any other man, and I think that Hillary is that person.
If it's about qualification, she's got tons of it. Let me get one more on the Hillary front. And Shelley, I appreciate your call. Anne in Ames, Iowa, and you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Went to my caucus last night. Really interesting. A lot of Bernie supporters seemed almost wistful that they weren't supporting the first woman to make this big move.
Yeah.
And several speakers alluded to that.
And how do you come down, Ann?
I support Senator Sanders, but I felt a tug in my heart that I wasn't able to support the first woman making this historic event.
That it is such an interesting thing. I mean, Rachel, for Barack Obama, his race was a huge, I would have to say, ultimately driver for him all through the race. What about Hillary's gender?
Well, you know, for a certain generation of women, it is really important. I spoke with some people last night at her party here in Des Moines. And, you know, for those women, they are with her 100%. They think of her as a part of their movement, a part of their community of people. She is their leader. There's no doubt. I think among younger women, they have a vague sense that this is an historic moment and they value that idea. But they're just having a really hard time connecting with her on the campaign trail. And, you know, Iowa is not a natural fit for Hillary Clinton. Certainly saw that in 2008. But the retail politics of the state, you know, it demands that candidates connect with voters. And she's really struggled with that now through two runs. I know a lot of people who say, you know, I agree with pretty much everything she says. I like the fact that she's a woman. I just don't like her very much.
James,
and in Iowa, that matters.
Yeah, absolutely. James, what's the bar for Hillary now in New Hampshire to be seen as in it to win it?
Look, I think the pressure is on Bernie Sanders. I mean, again, this is the only state right now, if you look at the rest of the map, where he's actually leading, and he's got a big lead. I don't know exactly how big of a lead he has to have coming out of New Hampshire to go on to other states. But look, I mean, this is still Hillary Clinton's contest to lose. The race was not reset last night because he did not win, though obviously it was really close. I think the fascinating thing to watch in this race, particularly on the Democratic side, is where do independent voters go? You know, independent voters can decide, A, to register to vote on Election Day, and B, which ballot they're going to pick.
Yeah.
40% of New Hampshire are independents, and so do they look at the contest in Iowa last night and say, man, that was really close and that's really exciting? Or do you look at the latest poll numbers and say, well, actually, Bernie's running away with it. I'm going to vote the Republican primary.
That's
a huge wild card.
We will all be watching the wild card and more. You three are all great. James Pindle with the Boston Globe in New Hampshire. Thank you so much, James.
Thank you.
Rachel Caulfield at Drake University. Loved having you, Rachel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
And Molly Ball at The Atlantic. We'll catch up with you, Molly.
Thanks, Tom. That was fun.
Listeners, our own Jack Beatty is in New Hampshire. He's writing about the whole week up to the primaries there. Look for his blog, his notes at onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us. Sign up for that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.